This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE. Or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Uh-oh. It might be, it might be a day today on the Jesse Kelly Show. We have obviously some big political news I will get to. COVID relief bill passing. Trump and the GOP having an official rift and a man living only off beer. But before we get to that legend, I have to issue a world-class warning to everybody before this history story. I've done dark on the show before. I will say our show on the reserve, the police reserve battalion, where it was normal guys who ended up executing a bunch of Jews, I would say that's probably the darkest story I've ever done. Our story today may get a tad darker, if you can imagine that. I'll put it to you this way. I know a lot about just various things when it comes to communism and World War II and and things that were happening in the Soviet Union and Germany and stuff like that. And when I say I know a lot, I'm certainly not some expert, but I love that era, World War I, World War II era, first half of the 20th century era, that I just end up reading a bunch of stuff on it. I watch everything I can and read a bunch of stuff on it. And so I get the high points. I get the low points. I get it. I get it. I've heard plenty of terrible tales. I came across this particular tale, which you've almost undoubtedly not heard of. I came across this particular tale a little while ago. And this is me, right? This is jaded, soulless, moralist me. I was horrified. The kind of horrified where I was reading something on it, and I realized I had my hand over my mouth. I had put my hand over my mouth, and I'm doing that thing where you're almost saying under your breath, "Oh, God, have mercy." That's the kind of tale this is going to be today. I'm going to skip over some details that I think are just gore. I'm not here to do that, but you want to know why I hate communism? Here's Exhibit A for your Reasons to Hate Communism book. You ready for this? Buckle up. It's a true story. If you were to write a horror movie, I don't think you could write one this bad. Let's go to the Soviet Union now. What's industrialization? Well, here's really what it is. Mao did the same thing in China, but the Soviets were all about that life. Once the communists took over in the Soviet Union, we're talking Lenin, Stalin, all this other stuff. What they were looking at was a country of mostly farmers. You're a farming country. Well, farming's great. Everyone likes to eat. I mean, farming is really, really necessary. But when you're the communist Soviet Union and later on communist China, you don't want to be a country of just farmers, because how is that going to help you conquer the world? Remember, communists want to conquer the world. They want to conquer everything. You're competing with the United States. You're competing with these other fancy European countries. You want to get modern and sexy, right? There's nothing sexy about a plow in a wheat field. Give me factories. I want steel. I want the. That's what you want. That's what helps you conquer the world. So you decide you're going to force the issue a bit, and you're going to force your country to industrialize. Now, how do you do that? You can't just snap your fingers and sprout up a factory. You need workers. You need workers to do what you're telling them to do. You're not going to see an advertisement in the newspaper, "Come make great wages with great benefits, building our steel factory today. There's even a 401k matching plan." No. If you're a communist, remember, it's an anti-human religion. You simply look at people as commodities. That will actually help us all. It helps me to remind myself of this. Remember this. A communist doesn't look at you as anything more, this is legitimate, than a stick of gum. That's what you are. You're a stick of gum. You have a use sometimes. If I happen to lose you, it's not really a big deal. If I do find a use for you, I'll use you, but you'll probably lose your flavor shortly and I'll just get rid of you. That sounds harsh. That's how the communist looks at people. That's how they look at the individual, not people as a whole. But the individual, you're nothing. You mean nothing. You're nothing. So when you want to industrialize a nation, you have to force people to do things. You have to use the resources you have. And the resources you have are people and farmers. Well, your farmers are going to be forced to produce, and the people who aren't doing the things you want them to do are going to be forced to do things like build a steel factory and then work in a steel factory. All right, so that's the general concept of it. I don't want to get too deep into all that right now, but that's the general concept of it. The farmers, man, did they get screwed. In Russia and places like Ukraine and other places, you see Stalin, all his factories and his new factory workers and his new mines and his new timber production, his people had to eat. The farmers had these farms and they had to produce this food, and farmers would regularly, and for obvious reasons, plan on there being a famine. Anybody who's talked to a farming family, any farmer who's ever farmed for any length of time, has a certain portion of the year's crop or year's money, depending on what they're doing with it, and they set it away. Why? Because famine is not some end-of-the-world disaster. Famine is inevitable. There is always another one coming around. You know it. You simply plan for it and get through it. It's just part and parcel. It's just way of life. Farmers would hold stuff aside. Farmers would hold stuff for their family to eat. Farmers would hold things for the famine to come. The Soviet Union would come just take all of it. They'd send the communist officials to take all of it. Soon, because of the forced quotas the farmers couldn't meet, the Soviet Union was killing people, arresting people, calling them lazy for not working as hard as they should for the state. If there was any resistance at all, people were arrested and deported. Ukraine was famous for this, famous for really bucking back against the Russians. Well, Stalin was not a man to take that lying down. Stalin made things even worse on Ukraine than other people. Soon you have this massive, massive famine in Ukraine. When I say massive famine, I'm talking about 10 million people dying. That kind of famine. Should be noted, just to keep it current here for you, you know the number one newspaper in America, the New York Times? Yeah, one of their writers, he covered for the famine and lied about it for the communists. You see, the communists have been here for a long, long time bringing you the news. Anyway, that's another story. We'll talk about that story another day. You now have what? You have a huge countryside in Russia, Ukraine, and otherwise of people, rural people, in whatever profession, who are starving and they're poor. Now, what would you do if you were starving and poor in the countryside? We all know what we do. Unless you have a relative somewhere else to go live, you're going to come to the cities where it's more easy to find soups and bread lines and things like that. It's more easy to find relatives. Hey, do you mind if we all pack into your apartment kind of a thing? So they do. They pack into the cities. Stalin doesn't want them in the cities. Stalin has a better idea. Buckle up. It's about to get rough.
Jesse Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
You need to quit dipping tobacco. Don't turn off the channel. I'm not going to make you feel guilty. I love dipping as much as you love dipping. I probably love it more. But we all know you need to quit. I knew I needed to quit even when I didn't want to quit. I mean, frankly, I never wanted to quit. I knew I needed to. But that's easier said than done. You can't just do that to people. Hey, you need to quit. Anyway, good luck. I've never believed in that. If you're going to tell people stuff like that, you're going to give advice like that or direction like that, you better have some solutions. I have a solution. And it's not a nicotine patch you throw on your arm. It's something you can actually put in your lip so you can enjoy that delicious feeling once again. It's called Jake's Mint Chew. Only it's nicotine-free, it's tobacco-free, it's even sugar-free. They have a bunch of different flavors. Go try it. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Use the promo code Jesse for 20% off. Oh, man, there is a criminal out there with all kinds of potential. Some 12-year-old jacking cars. Did you see this, Chris? I'm going to get to this story in a while. I love this kid. I mean, yeah, he's probably violent, but I like the kid a lot. 877-377-4373. Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We're going to walk through the Soviet Union, and I think I need to set up something else before I get to the rest of our story. When you hear about gulags, you can get a different image in your mind than what they were. And when I say that, it's because it's not that they were ever just one thing. It was the entire prison camp slash labor camp Soviet system. I will tell you, most of my life, when somebody said something like gulag, I pictured some tall concrete walls with razor wire and Soviet guards walking around with dogs and things like that. That's a prison. That kind of existed there. But the gulags were more something because they didn't want you in the prison anymore. The gulags were mostly, and they had them all over, the gulags were mostly in the remote parts of the Soviet Union, like Siberia. They could be, it could be in a half a cave. Mostly you need to think of them as camps. Sometimes these gulags were in such remote parts of the Soviet Union, and this is tough for you and I to understand given the world we live in now, they didn't have walls. Why? They didn't need walls. You're not leaving there alive. And we'll get to that later on. You and I can't relate to a country that was totally, I mean, that part of Russia, Siberia, especially then, is so remote, there weren't train tracks. There weren't roads. There's just hundreds of miles of frozen hellscape. All they have to do is drop you in a village and you're not going anywhere because there's nowhere to go. You won't live. You'll freeze or starve to death. The gulags can mean anything. And as you'll find out today, they'll move you from gulag to gulag because it's communist and because it's inefficient and nothing works right because everything's run by the government. They'll ship in a train full of prisoners and they'll get them over to this particular camp. And then the commandant in charge of the camp and the guards will finally say, whoa, okay, there's overcrowding and then there's overcrowding. And they were all overcrowded and horrible. The living conditions were unbearable and subhuman. But sometimes it would get so bad, you couldn't feed the workers enough for them to work. And we'll get to that work here in a second. So they'll build another camp, and then they'll grab some from that camp and ship them to the new camp. You have an understanding now? It's horrible. Now, workers. Remember we talked about the farmers who would migrate to the cities, the people from the rural areas who were starving and they're migrating to the cities? Stalin didn't want them in the cities. He didn't want the cities overcrowded. Didn't want them gobbling up all the food. And if you're a subhuman monster like Stalin, boy, did a solution just present itself. Let's see here. I have these people from the rural areas filling up my cities like Moscow and Leningrad, and I don't want them here. And there's homeless people all over the streets, and it's making communism look bad. And I also, wait a minute. I also need a bunch of people to move to the part of Russia where nobody wants to move because it's so miserable because there are tons of natural resources out there. We could farm that land. We could mine that land. We could timber that land. So I have all these people here, and I want a bunch of people here. Why don't I just move them on out? Now come the deportation. Stalin, because this is what communists do. You see in the FBI warnings about domestic terrorism here in America now? What communists do is they determine citizens who disagree with the direction of the government are enemies of the state. They are revolutionaries. They are violent. They must be locked up. Not that any of that would ever happen here, right? They start either turning people around, sending them back to the rural areas, or they're deporting them to places like Siberia. what's the way you're going to classify this? How are you going to figure out who to deport and not to deport? They came up with a system for that. They're called passports. This is what you see in the movies when you read about the old Soviet Union or watch these things about the old Soviet Union. You need papers. You have your papers. You get across this checkpoint. You have your papers. What it means is this. He would find the people, the communists would find the people they wanted in the cities. And of course, there were so many favors you had to do to get this, or you had to have a specific job they wanted you in, and they would give you a passport. And this passport was not just, oh, let me go home and put it in my safe. You keep this passport on you at all times. It's the document that says you are supposed to be here. If you don't have it, you're in very serious trouble. Why are you in such serious trouble? Well, they want to gather up. They have a number of people they want to make sure they've deported, and they're going to achieve that number. What are they going to do to achieve that number? They've already given the police force, they've already given them quotas on how many people they have to arrest because you have a certain number you have to send to mine it over there. If they catch you without your passport, without your papers, well, that's an easy way to meet a quota, isn't it? Guess you must be someone else. Guess you shouldn't be here at all. They start issuing the passports. Some people just went into hiding because they knew they wouldn't qualify. Some people, and these are probably the smart ones, even though it meant death for many of them too, some people just self-deported back to an area where they knew, I'd rather be a little hungry there than go somewhere else. Some people just chose to risk it. Whatever you chose, I hope you got out in time. And many, many, many did not. They get snatched up. The police just start arresting people and arresting people and arresting people. And this is not a normal justice system. There is no justice system. There is no court. You're technically supposed to get one, but they would just flat out tell people, just get on the train. You can talk to somebody wherever you're going. Shipping them with horrible conditions. I saw something. Stalin wanted the cities extra clean for May Day. You know that communist holiday far too many of us celebrate? It's Labor Day. It's May Day. He wanted the streets looking really good to make communism look good, so they went on another massive roundup. Now, who are they rounding up? It's not only the rural people, and this is going to be an important part of our story. It's not just the poor farmers. You don't just have a bunch of poor farmer camps out there. What do you farm, Larry? Wheat? Ah, that's nice, Bob. I was a corn farmer. No. You're rounding up because when you determine that you have the authority to deport enemies of the state, and you don't ever really specify who is an enemy of the state, and they had six different classifications for who should be deported, and it's hilarious. I'm not going to read them because it gets a little wonky, but you read them. Any one of them can mean anything. I mean, it can mean anything. They do that. Remember, communists do that on purpose. They'll issue these hard and fast rules that can mean anything, so it can mean anything. And they do that so it can mean you. So again, you're not just sending farmers. Maybe I don't like this guy. Maybe I don't like that girl. Maybe I'm enemies with this family. Oh, but there was another element coming along for a ride. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the COVID relief bill. Hang on. Super Beats heart shoes are by far the easiest thing you can do to help take care of your heart and your blood pressure. I know taking care of your health is not fun. Let's be honest. I mean, well, you can brag about your workouts all you want. We'd all rather sleep in and then wake up and eat 9 Belgian waffles for breakfast. Taking care of your health is difficult. It means you have to do things you don't want to do, except for Super Beats heart chews. I like Super Beats heart chews, as in it's something I would take even if they weren't so good for me. That's how good these things taste. I prefer the pomegranate berry. I eat 2 every single night with my dinner. Right after my dinner, I eat them. Go do it. It's good for you. Go to GetSuperBeats.com/Jesse. That's GetSuperBeats.com/Jesse. When you buy two bags, you get the third for free. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Remember, you can find me on social media at JesseKellyDC on Instagram, Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Locals. More and more of you are signing up to Locals. Remember, the Locals thing, I'm starting to post there more and more, and will continue to post there more and more because I can't be banned there. It has a free thing and a paid thing. Most of my stuff I put on Locals is going to be free. Now, I obviously do this to make money. I've never pretended otherwise. I enjoy it, but I do it to make money. But I'm not trying to make money on Locals. That said, I realize there are some people who want to pay and get something exclusive. So if you pay on the Locals thing, I am going to put up, you know, little videos on there of just me just riffing on an issue, maybe stupid, maybe serious, just because I don't want to feel like I'm cheating people out of money. Does that make sense, Chris? Well, you wouldn't understand that, but anyway. Famine, deportations, passports, you're gathering up a bunch of farmers and you're sending them to the camps, to the gulags, to Siberia. But you're not just gathering farmers. Remember, the police have quotas, so you're gathering everybody. When I say everybody, I mean there are stories like this. These are true stories, and I would highly recommend, I forget the book, one of the books I read on this, but there's a documentary I browsed last night. It's kind of putting a finishing touch on this. There's a documentary on TV, I forget where it is, about some part of this story. One guy, he invited some friends over for dinner. They're sitting around, a couple beers. Decided they wanted to go for some snacks. Who hasn't done that? Oh, man. Had a couple beers. Let's walk down to the corner store, grab some chips. I had some great chips this weekend. I need to tell you about that, but don't let me get distracted right now. Let's walk down to the corner store, grab some chips. Sounds good, Bob. Bob never came back. Why didn't Bob come back? Because Bob walked down to the corner store for some chips, and Bob got stopped by the police and asked for his papers. He's just running right down the corner, so just go get some chips. Where's your passport, Bob? I don't have it. Bob, you're under arrest. Bob left and never came back. No one ever knows what happened to Bob. Oh, there's a worse story. I debated not even telling it to you because the thought of it is just... All right, let's get it over with. Mother traveling with her 12-year-old daughter. They get to a train station. They get off at the train station. The mother decides to leave her daughter at the train station because she thinks it'll be safer. You stay here. I'm going to go look for bread. I'm going to go look and see if I can't get us some food. I'll come back. Mom takes off, gets some food, comes back. 12-year-old is gone. Why is she gone? She didn't have papers either. Cops arrested her too. You want to know the environment that 12-year-old is going into? Oh, I'll explain. You see, on top of the farmers and the 12-year-old girls and the guys going out for a bag of chips getting on these trains, remember, this is just a massive cleanup project. Yeah, you want the forced labor to go mine and do timber for you, but the Soviet deportations were also a way to get rid of that criminal element. They had criminals, too. Real-life criminals. I'm not talking about a petty thief who stole an apple trying to feed his kids for a day. Just like every society does, they had murderers, they had rapists, they had really, really, really bad people there. They're getting on the trains with the 12-year-old girl. They're getting on the trains with the man who was heading down for hors d'oeuvres. And they're heading east. Well, they head east. And this is a specific story. There are so many gulag stories. This is a specific one. They head east. Remember, there are no trials. None. You just go east. They get to a camp. Camps are overcrowded, as I've described. Really overcrowded and really overcrowded and really overcrowded. At some point, they decide they're going to be building new camps. They're always building new camps, and the prisoners are building the camps themselves. And they had a whole way they would build the camps or villages. They had a plan they were given. They just throw the people there and give them some tools and give them, you know, enough food to survive. And the first thing you would build would be a hospital and a place to keep clean, not because they cared about you, because they wanted to keep you alive so you could do more labor, that kind of thing. So, but it was a process to build these camps. They gather up, and I can't seem to get an accurate number on how many people were here. I've read 13,000. I've read 10,000. I've read 6,000. That's the number that's the most. But these are the people who are about to go into, well, how could you make a gulag worse? Let's go over it. Let's call it 13,000 for the time being. Wait, they gather them up. They're shipping them east out of one camp to a different camp. They get to, or about to get to, where the camp is supposed to be, but the camp's not done yet. They haven't really broken ground. There's no place to put them. Well, everything's disorganized. You don't care about these prisoners. About a third of them died on the way. They're starving to death. It's a disaster. You have to put these prisoners somewhere. Only you can't just drop off a truckload of prisoners anywhere because there are Soviet citizens in little Soviet villages around. You can't drop, because there are plenty of criminals in here too. You can't drop all these prisoners off just on the side of the road. You have to find some place to isolate them until you get the camp built. There's a river, a big river. We are in Siberia, right? This is a Siberian river, cold. Big river, cold river. And there's a gigantic island in the center of this river. They take these prisoners and they drop them off on the island. Now, I need you to picture this moment. When I say drop them off on the island, there's nothing on the island. You could go look at a picture of it to this day. It's called Nazina Island, or Nazino Island, depending on what spelling. N-A-Z-I-N-O. There's nothing there. It's a big frozen marsh or wet marsh. They drop them onto the island, the prisoners, many of whom aren't even fully clothed by this point in time. They have no tools. They have no food. They have no nothing because there's no care from the guards that the prisoners die anyway. You're just trying to survive and earn your paycheck. The one number I had when I was reading about 6,000 said there were about 4,500 men, about 300 women. Do the math on how that's going to work out. You see, what had already happened on this journey and in the camps is this. They're not all farmers. They're not all guys on a snack run. They're not all 12-year-old girls. You have real life, dark, dangerous criminals in there. Picture you and your girlfriends and your boyfriends, about 10 of you getting dropped in a supermax prison for violent offenders. That's what you just did on an island with nothing. No buildings, no tools, nothing. They had already been preying on the non-criminal types. When I say preying on them, if you managed to keep any documents or papers on you, they'd kill you for the paper to roll it up with cigarettes. There's a story I'm going to have to tell you next. I have to tell it to you. It's going to be horrific. I'm never, ever, ever going to do a show you have to turn off with your kids. Just know this is going to be a little bit uglier. I'll skip most of the things, most of how it went for women. I'll let you use your imagination. But there are guards in these camps and prison gangs in these camps, and these women have no protection at all. It's just terrible. But there is one thing you have to know. Because, look, you want to know the end result of communism? I'm about to give it to you.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
Hey, Dad. Your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad. Your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey. Why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Young Democrats like Ben see a lot of promises unkept.
They're putting that stimulus check on the back burner. They're putting the minimum wage hike on the back burner. And they're dropping bombs in Syria right now. And those bombs are kind of expensive for a dude who owes me $2,000.
Chris, what is that bomb? We're definitely playing that again on the show. It was some Biden voter on CNN. And those it is hilarious. Chris and I were just talking about this in the break. If it sounds like I'm delaying getting to this horrible part of the story, I am. I'm procrastinating. Okay, I can procrastinate because I don't want to do it. I feel like I have to do it. I feel an obligation to do it. I don't want to get to this part of the story, but I'll get to it in a second. What's hilarious is everybody woke up a few days ago and saw that we had bombed Syria. And there was like five people in the country who were happy about it. It was such a bizarre move. Everyone on the right and left were all like, wait, what? What are we doing? Why are we bombing Syria? I mean, I hope there was some kind of vital national security concern in there because that juice was not worth the squeeze. Nobody was happy about it. All right. The gangs have taken over. They've taken over before they even got to the island. Real violent men. And this part is something I have to be careful of. You know, I always talk about how we have bubbles and we have biases and we can get in these things where we can't see what other people are going through. I sometimes lose focus on the fact that I'm a big dude. I'm a dude, and I'm big. I'm 6'8", 230. Chris is a big dude. Chris is 6 feet. Chris goes through life, and he's, in general, not going to really be an appealing target for anybody. I mean, don't get me wrong. Look, he doesn't have to just lackadaisically ignore everything, but people aren't looking at Chris thinking, oh man, absolutely, yeah, that's easy prey right there. Let's go beat him up. Let's go do, because in general, he's going to be in the top 30% of people out there that are probably going to be stronger and able to defend themselves in some way. I'm not saying he's an ultimate fighter, but they're easier prey. You're going to see Chris and go, we can do better than that. If you're a crook, you're looking at Chris and thinking, I can do better. As a dude, I can walk through a dark parking garage. And yes, in case you're wondering, yes, I am always armed. But I can walk through a tall parking garage, armed or unarmed. And if there's a dark element there, if there's a criminal element there of some kind, no, I'm not bulletproof and I'm the furthest thing in the world from the toughest guy on earth. But they're not going to look at me coming at 6'8 and say to themselves, oh yeah, this is the one. They're going to look. And like all predators, they're going to say, well, there's probably easier prey out there. Women don't have that. Small, dainty men out there don't have that. They land on this island and they throw these people on this island. and it instantly becomes a horror movie. They start eating people on day one. I'm not talking Donner Party, held out as long as we can. Let me eat the tree bark first. I mean, day one, they're eating people. The gangs are extorting people. The guards are all sadists. They might be worse than the gangs. They routinely found people with their, I'm not even at the bad part yet, with their faces mutilated. Why? Because people had gold teeth. There was terrible dental work back then. They get gold crowns on their teeth. They would murder you and tear your teeth out just for the money to trade it for more food on the black market. It gets even worse. The guards, remember when I said they were sadists? They were bored. They were in charge. There was nothing else to do. Remember that frozen river? They'd go shoot ducks out of the sky and make the prisoners jump in the frozen river to fetch the ducks like dogs. If you were going to be executed for some real or imagined camp violation, and it wasn't like there were a lot of rules, they would put you in a boat and make you sing songs crossing the river while they threw breadcrumbs at you before they took you to the other side and shot you and let your body drop in the water. You remember I said they were eating people? The camp had a doctor. Apparently the doctor was well-fed. Everyone else is starving to death or in this Lord of the Flies scenario, just preying on other people. The doctor could rarely go out without a guard because every time he went out because of his hefty nature, they would yell at him, "Oh, I bet he tastes good. Look how much meat is on him." You ready for it? One girl, she was, I'm not sure how to put this. The camp guards were the only ones besides the gangs who could provide protection. I've already described what it was like for the women there. Now, women have to survive, too. Oftentimes, a woman would... This is going to be a tough one, Chris. We'll get this over with, then we're going to wrap this thing up. We're going to move on in the news of the day. I told you it was going to be a rough day. Hang on.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Let me get this over with. Women would oftentimes allow themselves to be taken in by gangs and or guards so they would have protection. Better to have the protection of one than be preyed on by many. One of the guards had taken in a lady. The other guards, the other gangs liked this lady. The guard took some time off. Told the other guards to look out for her while they were gone. They didn't. They took her outside of town, tied her to a tree, and ate her. They didn't even finish her off. She later died of blood loss. Communism is evil. Are you understanding why I hate it so much? Are you getting it yet? It is evil. This is how it ends. It always ends this way. Stop it before it gets there. I'll put a bow on this in a second. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Told you it was going to get dark today. I gave you the PG version. I want you to, and this is me, Tony. I'm giving it to you straight here. I gave you the PG version. They just left these people here for a year. I didn't even bring up the dysentery. Think about it. People get diseases. You're in a marsh. You're in a marsh. Freezing to death. It was so bad. People would get in the frozen river and lock arms and make a human raft trying to get out. Of course, the guards would shoot them. Or you'd drown. Or you'd freeze to death. And I hope some made it. I hope some made it. Lord willing. You know, I hope somebody made it out of there. Speaking of escaping, you know how we talked about there were criminal gangs and then there was the normal people? The criminal gangs, they were in charge, really. Besides the guards, the criminal gangs were in charge. Good to be in charge. Not good to not be in charge. If you're one of the non-criminal types, as a dude, too, you live in fear, a state of fear, that you'll be preyed on by the criminal types. They'll kill you and eat you. This was, again, as I described earlier, the norm. They'll come after you. For various things I'm not going to get into on a family show. One of their favorite tricks was they would recruit you forcefully or just ask you to help with their escape attempt. Hey, Jewish producer Chris, we're going to escape out of here next week. You in? Do you want to join our gang? Nobody will prey on you anymore. You're in our gang. You want to join our gang? Life's good in the gang. Look, you want to survive? Better to be eating than getting eaten. Of course, I'm in, sure. But really what they're doing is they're bringing you along on the escape attempt so they can kill you and eat you whenever they get hungry. I can't get numbers on this. Like I said, I heard everything from 13,000, 11,000, 6,000. I heard a lot of 6,000. Not very many people made it off this island alive. But you know what hits me most about this story? Not just the evils of communism, not just the horror of how it ends up. What hit me the most about the story is this. This took place in 1933. It's called the Nazino tragedy or the Nazino affair, if you're interested in looking up. And let me caution you again. I gave you the PG version. And when I say that, I mean that. If you pull up pictures of this, it's also known as Cannibal Island, of some of the things that went on in the gulags, this one and other ones, when it comes to that cannibal stuff and stuff like that, you're going to see things that I'm not willing to describe for you on the radio. Yeah, Chris, I told you not to do it. Definitely don't do it on the company computer, man. Chris is going to get us all fired. It's really bad, so let me caution you on that. But you know what hit me? The thing that hit me about this was, this took place in 1933. Do you know when we found out about this? 1988. That was when we finally had some of the documentation of this incident declassified. One, this is the one we had documentation of. How many mini incidents like this happened and never got recorded, or the records were destroyed? Two, headline from the Post-Millennial. New York Times falsely claims last year's BLM violence was misinformation. It's not necessarily about this specific thing, the New York Times or BLM or any of that. The length communists go to bury the truth may be the worst part about communism. It might be the worst part about communism, because once this incident happened, and don't get me wrong, there were people within the Soviet system who got in trouble for how bad the conditions turned out to be on this island. Think how horrible it has to be for the communists to look and go, oh gosh, you let them live like that? Now, don't get me wrong, there wasn't any real serious trouble, but you should have had the camp built in time. It was more just an inefficiency problem, not an actual care about the people problem. But 1933 to 1988, the information doesn't come out. Control of information is everything. What you read, what you see, you can present you can present lies to people and then repeat the lies over and over and over and over again. Have these people repeat the lies. Then these people will jump on the train and repeat the lies. And they're lying and they're lying and they're lying and they're lying. And soon everything you see is lies and people will believe them. How many gigantic lies out there do people believe that have no basis in reality?
Ideological subversion is the slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, aktivne meroприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's over-fulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it.
What do we do with the people who refuse to believe it? Let's be honest where we are right now. We are in a place where half the country hates the country. Now, that's actually bad and good news. That sounds dark. Half the country hates the country. That's true. But remember, you're not a tiny minority. Half the country still loves the country, too. That's the great news. That's why I keep telling you to move to red states, red areas, balkanize. You have millions of people out there who think just like you, want what you want. What can be done now? How far down the road are we? Let's take a minute and talk about this. I'm going to get to your emails. I'm going to get to your reviews. I'll get to this COVID bill. Hang on.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.